information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
We're doing absolutely everything in our power to eliminate the source of the leak. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 168 of Media Monarchy. It's the end of April, April 30th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Biowars and Gulf oil, Econo crash, Euro crash, fortune fail and the Fed, border wars and the Arizona immigration issue, expatriates, police states and drills in limbo, plus 9/11 updates and tons more. It's all here, April 30th, 2010, episode 168 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Pressure's unreal. I'm not saying that's not. You're causing a scene. You're wearing out that note. You scream until it's gone. You scream until it's gone.
Trust you have.
poison spill, spurt from your throat, hiss like steam. Cause the pressure's unreal. I'm not saying that it's not. You're causing a scene. You're wearing out that note. You scream until it's gone. You scream until it's gone. Gone, gone.
Let the poison spill from your throat, from their 2001 record, Dance Macabre. That was The Faint. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 168th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the end of April, April 30th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live in the studio, worldwide, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com for simulcasting Media Monarchy. Worldwide as well, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. RevereRadio.net, the worldwide home of free speech. LaughlinRadio.com in Laughlin, Nevada. All those stations bringing you Media Monarchy live as it happens. And welcome to you, wherever you are in the world, listening or re-listening, new or returning listeners. And we thank Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net on 104.1 FM, PhantomRadio.org, 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, OneSkyRadio.com on 90.7 FM, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, 87.9 FM in Canton, Georgia, thanks to stickam.com/groundzeroradio. Glenn from right here in the People's Republic from Oregon, making a ton of shows available at a small download size on CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And the opposite of that, my man Jeff of Radio23.org supplies the high-quality feed from Media Monarchy. It's all linked up. It's all connected, as we'll see. You know, you can always hit me up on FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. All those things fired up, rolling. Let me take a moment to tell you, we still have some DVDs left. 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, the new documentary from Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. Available exclusively through a handful of independent alternative media sites. $10 gets the power-packed DVD-ROM. And it supports what we're doing here at Media Monarchy. It helps to pay the bills and keep everything humming along in the information war. Thanks to all the folks that get in touch with me, send me news tips. I appreciate it. I can't respond to everything, so don't get mad. And today is, of course, Arbor Day. Plant a tree for your tomorrow. Kentucky Derby is tomorrow. May Day, May 1st. There's a lot going on in the world, inner space and outer. We went over all the space war hype in the previous episode. If you subscribe, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, that'll get you everything. I published late last night a brand spanking new interview with Andrew Hoffman of eugenicswars.com, the author of the new book, The New World Order and the Eugenics Wars, A Christian Perspective. We go over Project Bluebeam, fake rapture, psychological operations, good and evil, and the preparations and the signs and the stories and the symbols that we see. All that and so much more. So before we get into everything, I'll again implore you to support Media Monarchy. Share it out. We know you're on the social networks. They know you're on the social networks. Let's use the digital town squares to share information, because that's how we'll all make better decisions. Now, of course, as we look at the news, it's not good. And as if this were the most important part of it, the top of Google News right now from the Wall Street Journal: shares of oil servicers fall as Gulf disaster concerns spread. With the oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico continuing to wreak havoc, the pain was also spreading in shares of the oil services industry, hurting our good friends at Halliburton. Consumers helped drive U.S. economy to a 3.2% growth rate. It's higher spending for the third quarter in a row, but it still is limping along. Justice Department opens Goldman Sachs criminal investigation. We went over the Goldman Sachs sideshow. All, of course, coinciding with the new financial reform bills, quote-unquote, being pushed by Dodd and the like. And what we're going to see is, don't throw me into the briar patch. They'll act like they don't want it. The banksters, the organizations, the families, their frontmen and their shills and their patsies. It's all very multifaceted and multi-layered, but a lot of it, as we say, is the shadows on the wall. So, just as Goldman Sachs is being flogged publicly, is when the financial reform bill is floating around. Just as we're talking about drilling offshore, we have this. And the way we're going to get into it on MediaMonarchy.com, the news purge, a long list of headlines. Again, I can't go into everything, but I try and lay out a path for you. Do more research for yourself. Let me know about it. Let the Poison Spill is the name of this news purge. And we'll start with, of course, the BioWars and EnviroHealth headlines. And interestingly enough, this was before this oil catastrophe reached shore, as it has done now, as I come to you here, April 30th. Homeland Security was already probing the blast that sank oil rig. Is there chatter of eco-terror? Not yet. But there could be. More on that from Associated Press and Examiner.com. Coast Guard burning some Gulf slick oil. Dropping chemicals, I believe. Pentagon to send two planes to drop chemicals on Gulf oil slick. That's from Fox News 34 minutes ago. State of emergency already declared by Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. And from the Washington Post, Gulf oil spill presents a political challenge to Obama's offshore drilling plans. And as we have seen, and as we will continue to see, a lot of these things seem to happen right on time.
BP alerted us to additional oil leaking from their deep underwater well. They are working with our support to estimate the size of this breach. As has just been mentioned, the President has urged, out of an abundance of caution and mindful of new and evolving information, that we must position resources to continue to confront this spill. That being said, we have been anticipating and planning, and today I will be designating that this is a spill of national significance. What that means is that we can now draw down assets from across the country, other coastal areas by way of example, that we will have a centralized communications because the spill is now crossing different regions. In addition to the command center that we have operational in Robert, Louisiana, we are opening a second command center in Mobile, Alabama, for the BP spill. As part of our oversight of the response, I will be going to the Gulf Coast tomorrow along with Secretary Salazar and EPA Administrator Jackson to inspect ongoing operations. We remain focused on continued oversight. We'll be taking a very close look at efforts underway, particularly to minimize the environmental risks in the area affected by the leaking oil. We will continue to push BP to engage in the strongest response possible. We will continue to oversee their efforts, to add to those efforts where we deem necessary, and to ensure, again, that under the law, that the taxpayers of the United States ultimately are reimbursed for those efforts. Our key focus is making sure that people know what is going on, and they understand what relief efforts are underway, what the extent of the response is, what we know, what we don't know about this incident, and how we intend to move forward.
Now, oil is starting to wash ashore in the U.S. state of Louisiana, threatening the coastline's delicate wildlife. President Obama sent cabinet officials to deal with the crisis and pledged to use every single available resource to respond. The spill comes from a BP oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico, which sank after an explosion, killing 11 workers. Coast Guards say up to 5,000 barrels of oil a day are spewing into the sea.
And it seems like another man-made environmental disaster. We, of course, had the West Virginia mining accident just at the beginning of April. So the last part of that clip from Russia Today was much more recent. The first part of that clip was from a day or so ago, and that was Homeland Security head Janet Napolitano talking about oil and the taxpayers. And Homeland Security now and the military have pretty much completely acclimated us to having them involved in every issue and event that takes place. Another update here from Think Progress. BP Halliburton oil disaster could surpass Exxon Valdez in a week. So, of course, this story is constantly developing, and that's all I can put on the record for you right now. But just to reiterate that we're watching the events and the signs as these things happen. Coincidence? An interesting note from the Daily Mail. Remember that ash cloud from the Iceland volcano? New evidence says it didn't exist. Britain's airspace was closed under false pretenses, with satellite images revealing there was no doomsday volcanic ash cloud over the entire country. Skies fell quiet for 6 days, leaving as many as 500,000 Britons stranded overseas and costing airlines hundreds of millions of pounds. Estimates put the number of Britons still stuck abroad at 35,000. However, new evidence shows there was no all-encompassing cloud, and where dust was present, it was often so thin that it posed no risk. The satellite images demonstrate that the skies were largely clear, which will not surprise the millions who enjoyed the fine hot weather during the flight ban. Jim McKenna, the Civil Aviation Authority's head of airworthiness, strategy, and policy, admitted, quote, "It's obvious that at the start of this crisis, there was a lack of definitive data." It's also true that for some of the time, the density of ash above the UK was close to undetectable. The satellite images will be used by airlines in their battle to win tens of millions of pounds in compensation from governments for their losses. That's from Daily Mail. More well-timed environmental seeming catastrophes. Skull and Bones Kerry says Shell and the now embattled BP and ConocoPhillips will back the coming climate bill. More on that from Mother Jones. There's a great op-ed from Al Gore on Huffington Post called Denialists in Denial. Al Gore, of course, wants you to pay carbon taxes to firms that he would financially benefit from, along with J.P. Morgan Chase and the Rockefellers and more. And that's what we see through all of these stories. And what we'll see and what I'll say right now is that if I don't have all the answers about all these things, again, I'm just kind of data mining and collecting the information and trying to put some pieces together and give some subtext and context. The same people who cause the problems will pose as our saviors. And agendas are pushed and cultural, social, football issues are thrown around, and again, it's all to divide and conquer us, you and I, me and you. And they're good at it. Government report says global warming may cause cancer and mental illness. That's from CNSnews.com. Global warming causes cancer and mental illness. Not the poisonous pharmaceuticals and poison in the water and chemicals and rocket fuel in the water and the frankenfood. It's global warming. Australia puts carbon trading scheme on hold. That's from The Guardian. H1N1 vaccines near expiration as flu strain's anniversary passes. Yes, my friends, it's well past the one-year anniversary of swine flu. Flu shot fatality. A toddler dies 12 hours after having vaccination in Australia. More on that from AdelaideNow.com.au. Big Brother to track your medication compliance with electronic transmitters in pills. That's from NaturalNews.com. And a question posed by Right Side News. Will national healthcare require national RFID chips? How are you going to track all these things? How are you going to track if you've got your government-mandated healthcare? Or if you fall out of favor? Tying us all into the grid. There's a great video on Dot Connector UK, the new and improved flu scam, 2010. GlaxoSmithKline profits climb on healthy sales of swine flu vaccine. That's from The Telegraph. A fascinating story from NPR, where somewhere in this mess of news, there's a link to a story that also points out an NPR story that basically had Philip Zelikow on as and just introduced him as, you know, he's a professor and a consultant and expert. Nothing about his ties to the national security state and the 9/11 Commission. But in this story, NPR and the mass drugging meme, that's my word for it. Their story is called When the Trust Hormone is Out of Balance. And it's as part of their Trust in Government series. So in talking about the trust hormone, there's a joking quick aside about putting drugs in the water for everyone. Thank you, Foundation Funded Media. 9-bin recycling system being introduced in the UK. That's from the Telegraph. Can't wait for that. We've mentioned before, here it is again from Sky News, China to sterilize 10,000 to ensure family planning at targets. And going right along with that from the Times Online, doctors sterilize Uzbek women by stealth. That's their headline. Proliferation experts worry bio attacks being ignored. Lawsuit over Army chemical weapons stockpile in Pueblo, Colorado, settled. Both of those from BioPrepWatch.com. And rounding out the BioWars Enviro Health updates, let's hop over to the big rotten apple where New York's considering stealing organs from people.
Organ donation has become a vital way to save lives around the world.
But a vast shortage of donors continues to mean people are losing their lives while on waiting lists. CBS News' Kristen Cole has the latest on a unique proposal to change all that.
New York State Assemblyman Richard Brodsky nearly lost his daughter, Willie, at 4 years old when she needed a kidney transplant. And again, 10 years later, when her second kidney failed.
We have 10,000 New Yorkers waiting on lists for organs today. We import from other states half the organs we transplant. It is an unacceptable failed system.
To fix that, Brodsky introduced a new bill in Albany that would enroll all New Yorkers as organ donors unless they actually opt out of organ donation. It would be the first law of its kind in the U.S.
Overseas, 24 nations have this. Israel has it, other nations. So it works, and it works without a lot of controversy.
Currently, one of the biggest obstacles to being an organ donor, according to advocates, is while 9 out of 10 of us would like to do it and are favorable to it, only 1 in 10 have actually signed up to become a donor.
Today, the New York Organ Donor Network honored families who donated the organs of loved ones with a planting ceremony at the New York Botanical Gardens. Jean Carnevale had a timely talk about organ donation with her 27-year-old son before he died in a fatal car accident.
Michael and I had a conversation 2 weeks prior to his accident on a way to a family funeral.
The thing about organ donation is we have a cure in our hands. It's not cancer.
Legal experts say if the law is passed, it will likely face challenges in court from family members or some religious groups.
I think it's a little heavy-handed. I think that we should have the right to choose that.
I think it's a way to get, people who are lazy but are in favor of organ donation to donate organs.
But many are hoping this law will help people to make a choice, one way or the other. Kirsten Cole, CBS 2 News.
Currently, you can make your organ donation wishes known by signing the back of your driver's license, signing up online, or through a healthcare proxy. We put more in our links and numbers section at WCBSTV.com.
Oh, thank you. It works in Israel. Need I remind you of the story last year, the bust in New York and New Jersey involving politicos and rabbis and black market organ trafficking and money laundering? Up next, it's the drug war. Rest in peace, Jack Herer. Some folks say Herar. Herer, I believe, is what it's pronounced as. H-E-R-E-R. The Hemperer, laid to rest. More on that from Salem News, from right here in Oregon. Jack Herer, the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, longtime advocate for the reform of marijuana laws. Majority wants to treat pot like alcohol. That's from News Junkie Post. Mexico extradites drug cartel leader wanted in the U.S. for 25 years, and the U.S. has sent Noriega to France. Remember Manuel Noriega? More on that from allgov.com. The last note on the drug war. Coca cultivation rises in Colombia, the U.N. says. But this is worth reading the first paragraph from the Washington Post. The amount of land devoted to the production of coca, the leaf used to make cocaine, has grown at a dramatic pace in Colombia, despite a huge American-funded counter-drug program of aerial fumigation and aggressive interdiction. Huh. We spend more and more money and just somehow more and more drugs come out. God, how does that happen? History Mystery notes, colleague defends anthrax lone gunman suspect Ivans. from the New York Times as well as other sources, a former Army microbiologist who worked for years with Bruce Ivins, with whom the FBI blamed for the anthrax letter attacks that killed five in 2001, told a National Academy of Sciences panel on Thursday, last Thursday, the 22nd, that he believed it was impossible that the deadly spores had been produced undetected in Dr. Ivins' laboratory, as the FBI asserts. More from 911blogger.com of Goats and Men. Colleague says anthrax numbers add up to unsolved case. The Armenian genocide, 95 years later, it must be recognized. More on that from newsjunkiepost.com. Obama called it an atrocity, but it's never called a genocide. In an interesting, if incorrect, story from NBCDFW.com, they title it as "The Last Two Living Witnesses of JFK Assassination Die." The deaths of two North Texans in the last week means events surrounding the assassination of JFK, once told by firsthand witnesses, can now only be retold by historians. H. Lewis Nichols, 94, was president of the Dallas Bar Association at the time of the assassination and took it upon himself to meet with Lee Harvey Oswald to make sure he had legal representation. Aubrey Reich, 72, was an ambulance driver for Parkland Hospital. He placed the president's body in a coffin and helped First Lady Jackie Kennedy into the hearse, which is misspelled, that carried the president's body to Love Field. Fortunately, the comments on this story point out, as one even said, how can you say the last two living witnesses? I'm 62 and I was there. Again, this being out of Texas. Beverly Oliver is a witness and still very much alive. Ernest Brandt is very much alive. Sloppy reporting, but important to note nonetheless. A couple media meme notes. Drop in cigarette use mirrors drop in smoking in movies. That's from AllGov. And more from last week's coverage of Islamic fascism in America, the silencing of South Park. And now it's on to the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Of course, this last Sunday, Obama and Biden both went to Beckley, West Virginia, again, a mere 15 miles away from where I was born and raised in southern West Virginia, for the memorial. And I'll again remind you of our recent interview with Reverend Billy of RevBilly.com on the banksters and J.P. Morgan and Mountaintop Revival. But from the Washington Post, as Obama visits coal country, many are wary of his environmental policies. We'll have a few more West Virginia worry updates in just a few moments. But let's have a note about blackmail, how the controlling elite owns politicians. Fleshing that story out, which is also from Paul Joseph Watson. Coincidence? Lindsey Graham withdraws support for Dem legislation a week after blackmail charge. Lindsey Graham, who of course we've noted quite recently that he and Chuck Schumer are behind this national biometrics identification card for all workers, tying in to the immigration meme. Lindsey Graham has withdrawn his support for both the Democrats' pro-amnesty immigration bill and cap-and-trade legislation just a week after AliPAC Chairman Gein gave a speech in which he demanded that Graham come clean on the fact that he is being blackmailed over his homosexuality. Did you get that? So, the previous article we mentioned, how the controlling elite owns politicians. They're all corrupted and co-opted to get in those positions. Need I mention the Franklin scandal? The culture of D.C. is totally and completely corrupt. That's an op-ed on Huffington Post. One for the irony file. The RNC accuses Obama of shredding the Constitution and nominating sex offender defenders. Again, pointing out that we're nonpartisan here. Both sides are totally bought and paid for, and they prop each other up. And anytime there's any real third-party grassroots opposition, it's infiltrated and disrupted and misdirected and ultimately destroyed. And when one party's in favor, the other party's out of favor. When your team's winning, somehow you're blind to all the things that are still going on that you could see when it was your enemy team. So we have the RNC accusing Obama of shredding the Constitution. As if all of this started with Obama. As if all of this started with Bush. They're the front men for the agenda. Oh, but they're all writing books. George and Laura both have books. We'll get to Georgie's when we hit 9/11 updates. But Laura Bush opens up about that crash that killed her boyfriend, mysteriously, back in Texas. But even more, Laura Bush says they suspect they were poisoned, she and Georgie, poisoned at the hotel in Germany in 2007 at the G8 meeting. More on that in the video from CNN. Possible Supreme Court pick has ties with Goldman Sachs, of course. And CanadaFreePress.com closing out our Obama Saya updates. Obama's shadow government. Lots of names of folks you don't know. Unelected. Advisory. Czars, if you will. Exempt from congressional oversight. Didn't submit to the Senate confirmation process. And these are the positions that we find the minions from the roundtables and the think tanks. As we go up the ladder, up the pyramid, up through the families and organizations, this is where we find the trilateralists and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderberg folks. But let's get to the War Horrors updates. Suicides by veterans average 18 a day. That's from allgov.com. More from Raw Story. 18 veterans kill themselves every day with links to the reports. Law professor says drone pilots could be tried for war crimes. That story blowing up all over Danger Room. Afghanistan violence up nearly 90% in last year. That's from CNN. Here's one you didn't hear about. 90,000 people protested a U.S. base on Okinawa. Azerbaijani MP says the U.S. to use Armenia to attack Iran. Using Armenian territory, and there's, again, Armenia in the news. Ron Paul noting that the House just basically passed another warmongering bill, essentially kind of asking for sanctions, saying you go along with the president on sanctions on Iran, as if they're the massive threat in the world. But this doesn't help. Iranian plane buzzes carrier in Middle East. That's from Navy Times. More than 50% of U.S. government spending goes to the military. That's from Global Research. Think about that. And think about the problems that we just can't seem to solve them. Why do our schools all suck? Why is our bridges and roads falling apart? Why can't we pay for anything? Look at all these other problems. Hey, let's blame it on those people. Let's all fight. And again, the war machine rolls on, chewing up and spitting out well-meaning folks trying to do good, who then don't even get helped if they make it out the other side alive. 4wins10.com goes into the instruments of worldwide domination. Obama administration spending billions on new global strike weapons. We did go over that extensively in the previous episode, and it's all up on cyberspacewar.com. Now a few notes on the mad scientists, of course, both from Danger Room, both always referring to the mad scientist agency under the Pentagon, DARPA. Boost training with computer troop mind meld. Military wants to supercharge troop smarts. The video games are already doing it. It's a smooth transition right into the military, and before you know it, you'll be killing insurgents with a drone while they're 7,000 miles away and you're just playing Xbox Live. U.S. subpoenas New York Times reporter over book on CIA. More on that from the New York Times. But quickly, let's go through a few notes of West Virginia worry. Massey Energy shareholders suing the board of directors. Of course, Massey Energy being involved in the mining explosion. Mine Safety Administration evacuates three West Virginia mines just a few days ago. Last week, man dies after being crushed at a West Virginia mine. That's from Wall Street Journal. And another note, and we referenced it on foodworldorder.com. What's eating us, as in the U.S.? Food revolution not just made for TV. That's from News Junkie Post, and that's following up on our story from March on Food World Order. Food revolution off to contentious and hopeful start in Huntington, West Virginia. One update that I just caught this morning, by way of Reuters, Massey Energy faces criminal probe for mine blast. Massey Energy Company is under criminal investigation by the FBI after the deadly mine explosion earlier this month in West Virginia that killed 29. The FBI is probing the company and the circumstances surrounding the explosion, including for potential negligence. And we shall see. Now let's get into the econo crash, the euro crash, fortune, fail, and the Fed, and even geopolitics updates. First one, an interesting note from HuffingtonPost.com. Artist Chris Ware's rejected Fortune magazine cover paints an honest but dismal picture of American capitalism. When Fortune magazine asked comic book artist and Oak Park resident Chris Ware to design the cover of their Fortune 500 issue, they probably weren't expecting his beautiful and Marxist interpretation of modern capitalism. The Chicagoist.com reported Friday that Ware was asked to design the May cover of the magazine, but his final product, which featured Guantanamo Bay prisoners, Mexican factory workers, and a few potshots at business execs and money-grubbing politicians, was apparently not what Fortune had in mind, so they killed the cover. Still, a high-res version of the Chris Ware cover is making its rounds on the internet, and fans are delighted, as am I. I love Chris Ware's artwork. You see it in McSweeney's, all over the place. The Smartest Kid in the World, his amazing book. FDIC shuts down 7 banks in Illinois, which ties into this from Reuters. Regulators seize bank linked to U.S. Senate candidate. Regulators last Friday seized a Chicago bank owned by the family of the Democratic nominee running for the U.S. Senate seat once held by President Barack Obama. Broadway Bank was among 7 Illinois banks whose failure was announced last Friday. U.S. regulators have seized 15 banks in the past 2 weeks as the FDIC ratchets up efforts to clean up the banking industry. 57 so far this year. The bank is owned by the family of Alexei Giannoulias, the first-term Illinois state treasurer who's in a tight race for Obama's previous post to be decided in the November election. Obama backed Giannoulias, a banking scion, for treasurer, and the two have played basketball together. Need I remind you of the Blagojevich scandals and trying to sell Obama's Senate seat? tying into the Chicago corruption machine. It's all back there in the massively ever-growing Media Monarchy archives. Wall Street bets on cities and states failing. That's from AllGov, but from McClatchy. Going into a little bit of the Goldman Dog and Pony show we had this last week, we made money betting against the mortgage market. In an internal email released last Saturday, Goldman Sachs chief executive Lloyd Blankfein wrote in November 2007 that the firm, quote, didn't dodge the mortgage mess, but made more than we lost, end quote, by betting against the U.S. housing market. Blankfein's email, which a Senate investigations panel released with three other subpoenaed company documents, appears to contradict Goldman's denials that it profited from the subprime mortgage meltdown by secretly betting that the housing prices would fall. At the same time, Goldman was selling tens of billions of dollars in risky mortgage securities. Goldman said that its contrary bets were largely on behalf of its clients. The release of the document sets the stage for a confrontation that happened on Tuesday when Blankfein and six other present and former Goldman execs testified to the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, which will begin revealing the results of a year-long investigation. It's going to be Don't Throw Me Into the Briar Patch from the Banksters. But bringing it back down to street level, hundreds camp out for a job in Queens.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Even if it means camping out in the rain for a chance at a job application, hundreds of job seekers did just that in Queens in the hopes of landing a coveted job that could pay $40 an hour.
CBS 2's Catherine Brown live in Long Island City with the story of this career camp out. Catherine.
Good afternoon to you both. And yeah, engineers, electricians, construction workers, a variety of skill levels, hundreds spent the weekend camped out right here this morning. Many left with a job application, but as you can see from the sign right here tonight, many others are still empty-handed.
The sky is the limit after this.
Aaron Johnson is living month to month, struggling to pay the bills with a four-year-old daughter to support. And here, he's one of the lucky ones. After 3 days of sleeping on the street, he left with one of just 750 job applications handed out for a position as an elevator technician apprentice, a secure job with pension and benefits, and an earning potential up to $40 an hour.
You don't want to keep working these dead-end jobs, check to check to check to check. I don't want to do that anymore.
More than 1,000 eager applicants began lining up as early as Friday morning, armed with a variety of skills and warm blankets. Though many near the end of the line knew they probably wouldn't even get an application, desperation to land a job fueled their determination to stand here anyway and hope for the best.
And I got laid off, and that's why I'm here looking for my future.
Oh, it's real tough. You know, last night I was watching the news and they're saying 1 out of 10 New Yorkers are out of work, you know, and it's not getting any better.
But for the fortunate few who walked out with this precious piece of paper, things may be looking up.
Yeah, baby girl. She depended on me in 3 years to have the big house. And that's what I'm working on.
The union tells us they plan to hire 75 workers and possibly more depending on the economy. Live tonight in Long Island City, Queens, I'm Catherine Brown, CBS 2 News.
More EconoCrash updates. Alan Grayson, Representative Alan Grayson, discloses that the aforementioned Dodd financial quote-unquote reform bill covertly eliminates already passed legislation requiring a full audit of the Federal Reserve. More on that from ZeroHedge.com. Webster Tarpley getting into fighting the derivatives cancer with a Wall Street sales tax, or a Robin Hood tax, if you like. For nations living the good life, the party's over, says the IMF. That's from the Washington Post. Is the bank tax a major step towards world government? More on that from economicpolicyjournal.com. More video and audio documentation on the global bank conspiracy, and the EconoCrash updates go on and on. From the economiccollapseblog.com. Economic recovery is moving along quite well, just as we noted. Looking at Google News, consumers help drive U.S. economy to 3.2% growth rate. It's at the top of Google right now. So economic recovery is moving along quite well for the old boys down on Wall Street. Goldman sideshow hyped to push through Obama banking reform. More on that from InfoWars, how Goldman Sachs made $100 million a day in a flash. More from Tarpley.net on seizing and liquidating Goldman Sachs. Banks bailed out by U.S. taxpayers are paying us back by shorting our states and cities. That's from Washington's blog. And again, you see how these things tie in. They benefit when things go wrong, and somehow they've always seemed to bet that things are going to go wrong, even though it's on their watch. Funny how that happens. Gas jumps to more than $9 in an Alaskan town. But this debt-like cancer addressed by Obama Commission on U.S. debt. That's from Bloomberg. But this deficit commission's most realistic goal is scaring the hell out of us. Tying in with this, I had to dig through a Huffington Post piece that, again, thanks to my man Zach for the news tips, all tied in with a symposium paid for by the former president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Pete Peterson. Royal Dutch Shell profit surges 57%. Greek bonds rated junk by S&P. That's from the BBC. Iceland volcano airlines could get £2 billion taxpayer-funded ash payouts. We already referenced that. But back to Greece, they may need up to 120 billion euros as they're being assimilated. S&P slashes Spain debt rating. Eurozone edges closer to endgame as Greek contagion hits Portugal. That's from The Independent. Trichet calls for the corrupt Bank of International Settlements, the central banker's central bank. Of course, connected to Nazis, as most of the old boys somehow are, or were. Trichet calls for the corrupt BIS to be the boss global government in a CFR speech. Again, you see the trickle down the pyramid. 20 things you'll need to survive the next Great Depression is a controversial post over on the Economic Collapse blog. It's all about whether or not you need boots and food and protection in backpacks and flashlights and radios and all that. Is it going to get that bad is the question. Is it becoming less of a question every day? So let's try to break this down quickly. And this is something we go into on the latest episode of The New World next week with CorbettReport.com. The economic crisis in Europe is not complicated. You might assume that the global economic crisis is complicated. Just when it looked like things were getting better, Greece, Portugal, Spain melt down. It's too complicated for any layperson to understand, right? No. Not really. There wouldn't be a banking crisis among nations if banks' toxic gambling debts hadn't been assumed by the world's central banks. As pointed out in December 08, the aforementioned Bank for International Settlements, BIS, is often called the central bank's bank. As it coordinates transactions between central banks, BIS points out in a new report that the bank rescue packages have transferred significant risks onto government balance sheets. No wonder Greece, Portugal, Spain, and many other European countries, as well as U.S. and Japan, are facing serious debt crises. Eurozone central banks, like America's Federal Reserve, create fiat money out of thin air. That's one of the primary problems, is that Europe and America have debt-based economies and that these debt-based Ponzi schemes have reached their maximum limit. Private banks don't make loans because they have extra deposits laying around. The process is the exact opposite. The system, no longer based on assets. And it is, in fact, a monopoly system. Governments and people don't have access to the printing presses, except if you're North Dakota. But we don't have access to the printing presses, so we have to pay the monopolists to run them. That's about as simple as I can get it. And a few geopolitical updates since we're bouncing around the Eurozone. Dead Kaczynski's twin to run for president of Poland. And, of course, the questions grow surrounding the Polish plane crash. Why was the guy who shot footage at the crash site killed? Why can you hear gunshots in the video? Five Israelis, including a retired IDF general, charged with organ trafficking. That sounds familiar. That's from The Guardian, April 22nd. Gordon Brown calls voter bigoted in a campaign gaffe. You gotta love those. Pray for more of them as the mask slips. And from Press TV, Blair, that's right, Tony Blair, lobbies for Gaddafi on behalf of Shell Oil. See how this works? We do have an update that I grabbed for April 30th from the Wall Street Journal. New shareholders head to Berkshire annual meeting. When Berkshire Hathaway bought railroad operator Burlington Northern Santa Fe in February, it got at least 65,000 new shareholders, swelling the ranks of one of the most loyal shareholder groups in the world to more than 550,000. Some of these investors are headed to Omaha, Nebraska this weekend for their first Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. Attendance this year will likely be higher than in 2009 when a record 35,000 or so turned up to get advice from Chairman Warren Buffett in the wake of the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. The Oracle of Omaha. He was having a special meeting at Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska on the morning of 9/11, one of the places where Bush just happened to crisscross and visit. One of the folks there hanging out at this nice little golf get-together, she was, you know, it was nice and lucky for her to get away from work because she would have been in the World Trade Center building where Fiduciary Trust was hit by 747. So Buffett and the Berkshires having little meetings here for May Day. Now, quickly, even though it's massive, but it's another one that's only going to grow, and I'll try and get what I can on the record for us here and now on this April 30th, 2010. But as we've already discussed, this Goldman sideshow happens just as we're trying to ram through financial quote-unquote reform. These environmental events happen. The Gulf oil spill. Let the poison spill. Just as we're talking about drilling. And the mining explosion. Another man-made environmental catastrophes. You know, kind of like the Simpsons movie. But right on schedule, as we reported last month on MediaMonarchy.com, that with the passage of Obamacare, the next item on the New World agenda was going to be immigration reform. So we have the flashback links for you to March. We've got the documentation from USA Today and the op-eds from Newsweek. And remember, this all ties in with another story from March that we've already referenced. Chuck Schumer, Lindsey Graham, Congress using the immigration issue to push for a national biometric ID card for all workers. It'll seem like it's just for immigrants, but it's for all workers. And that's how all these things work. There's scapegoats, there's setups. There's misdirected anger, and again, we're all supposed to be fighting amongst ourselves. These things don't happen by accident. It's part of a larger agenda. And it's all connected. Arizona immigrant law energizes Hispanics and Dems. This from Reuters just a few days ago. Hispanic and Democratic lawmakers furious over Arizona's harsh crackdown on illegal immigrants expect huge rallies across the U.S. this weekend, piling pressure on Obama to overhaul immigration laws in an election year. Protest organizers said on Wednesday outrage over the Arizona law, which seeks to drive illegal immigrants out of the state bordering Mexico, has galvanized Latinos and would translate into a higher turnout for May Day rallies in more than 70 U.S. cities. The marches and demonstrations are going to be far more massive than they otherwise would have been, said Juan Jose Gutierrez, an L.A. rally organizer who runs an immigration assistance company. The backlash began last Friday, April 23rd, after Arizona Governor Janet Brewer signed into law a measure that requires state and local police to determine a person's immigration status if there's a reasonable suspicion they are undocumented. Critics say it's unconstitutional and opens the door to racial profiling. Republican backers of the law say it is needed to curb crime in the desert state, which is a key corridor for drug and migrant smugglers from Mexico. The crowds on the streets from L.A. to New York could be the biggest since 06, when hundreds of thousands of marchers urged former President Puppet Bush to overhaul federal immigration laws. He tried but failed in Congress. With what's going on in Arizona, we see renewed energy for folks to fight for immigration reform, said spokesperson, organizer of Firm Fair Immigration Reform Movement, organizer of rallies and vigils today and tomorrow. In Washington, a diverse group of more than two dozen lawmakers, Hispanics, Blacks, Asian whites, held a news conference outside the Capitol Wednesday to denounce the Arizona law as a violation of civil rights. What Arizona has done is that it has galvanized, united, fortified, focused our immigration movement, Democratic Representative Luis Gutierrez declared at the news conference. We do have updates, but let's just get a quick synopsis on the immigration issue.
Cries of protest over Arizona's new immigration law that were heard in Phoenix this weekend are echoing outward. In San Francisco, city leaders are calling for a boycott of Arizona and Arizona-based businesses over the law, which is set to take effect this summer.
We in the city and county of San Francisco want to send a very clear statement to the state of Arizona. There are consequences when you target a whole group of people, when you're essentially making it a criminal act to be undocumented, something that not even federal law does.
The new law directs state and local police to question people about their immigration status if there is reason to suspect they are illegal.
Porque son legislaciones.
Mexico's President Felipe Calderón condemned the new law and warned that relations with the border state will suffer. In a speech at the Institute for Mexicans Abroad, he said the law opens the door to intolerance, hate, discrimination, and abuse in law enforcement. However, the law has strong support in Arizona, where there are an estimated 460,000 illegal immigrants. Supporters say it's necessary to protect Arizonans from a litany of crimes they contend are committed by the illegal immigrants.
You want fear? Fear the federal government's failure, not police officers' commitment to the rule of law.
As the controversy continues to grow, opponents are planning to challenge the new law in court. And President Obama has asked the Justice Department to complete a review of the law's implications before the administration decides how to proceed. Brian Thomas, The Associated Press.
Despite dramatic protests against Arizona's new immigration law, two state lawmakers plan to propose similar legislation here in Texas. The new Arizona law says police can stop people just on the suspicion they might be here illegally, and it's now a crime for Arizona immigrants to lack registration documents. Now, Texas State Representatives Leo Berman and Debbie Riddle say they'll file similar bills when the legislature reconvenes in Austin in January. Tonight, KSAN's Shannon Wolfson looks in-depth at the chances of this bill passing here in Texas.
Texas stands for progress and moving forward, not going back.
In Austin's Plaza Saltillo, those against Arizona's immigration reform law stood shoulder to shoulder in solemn defiance.
We're not going to let it happen.
the law that was passed in Arizona is not something that we welcome in the state of Texas.
One day after Tyler legislator Leo Berman announced he would introduce similar legislation in Texas, Representative Debbie Riddle of the Houston suburb of Tomball says she'll do the same.
The opponents of this want to make it a big racial profiling thing, want to make it a big racist thing. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with safety and security.
Believe this, I think the dynamics in Texas are much different than they are in Arizona.
Representative Trey Martinez-Fisher is the chairman of the Mexican-American Legislative Caucus in Texas. He says the support for this kind of legislation just isn't there in this state.
I think I can get more support for legislation to have Leo Berman and Debbie Riddle deported to Arizona.
Texas Governor Rick Perry is not commenting on the Arizona law, but has said it's up to the federal government to control immigration, not the states. Martinez-Fisher says Texas legislators aren't likely to take up immigration next session with a projected budget shortfall and scheduled reviews of several state agencies.
We have enough work to do, and we have our time, we have better spent on working on issues that we can actually solve.
But Representatives Riddle and Berman still plan to introduce their bills when the legislature convenes in January.
That was Shannon Wilson reporting. The Austin Immigrant Rights Coalition is planning a march this Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock, starting at the State Capitol building and going down Congress Avenue to City Hall. They say they are in favor of immigration reform, but do not support it in the form of the Arizona law.
Texas rep to propose Arizona-like law, as we heard in the second part of that clip. KXAN.com, the first part from the Associated Press. But however, according to an Angus Reid public opinion poll, 7 in 10 Americans support Arizona immigration law. Small riot breaks out in immigration protests, so says MyFoxPhoenix.com. Arizona is a police state and I'm not going back. That from an op-ed in the New York Times, Breathing While Undocumented. Predator drones to fly over Tex-Mex border. Doesn't that make us all feel so much better now? And one comment on this post, is this all a GOP game to swipe the November election? And I would say it's all a game. Watch how we're being tugged around in different directions in the culture war. See who it benefits. And a story that ties well into all this from the New York Times. More American expatriates give up citizenship. Amid mounting frustration over taxation and banking problems, a small but growing number of overseas Americans are taking the weighty step of renouncing their citizenship. What we've seen is a substantial change in mentality among the overseas communities in the past 2 years. Before, no one would dare mention to other Americans that they were even thinking of renouncing their U.S. nationality. Now, it's an openly discussed issue, said the director of American Citizens Abroad. The Federal Register, the government publication that records such decisions, shows that 502 expatriates gave up their U.S. citizenship or permanent residency status in the last quarter of 2009. That's a tiny portion of the 5.2 million Americans estimated by the State Department to be living abroad. Still, 502 was the largest quarterly figure in years, more than twice the total for all of 2008, and it looms larger given how agonizing the decision can be. There were 235 renunciations in 2008 and 743 last year. Waiting periods to meet with consular officers to formalize renunciations have grown. Anecdotally, frustrations over tax and banking questions, not political considerations, appear to be the main drivers of the surge. Expat advocates say that as it becomes more difficult for Americans to live and work and abroad, it will become harder for American companies to compete. American expats have long complained that the U.S. is the only industrialized country to tax citizens on income earned abroad, even when they are taxed in their country of residence, though they're allowed to exclude their first $91,400 in foreign earned income. One Swiss-based business executive who spoke on condition of anonymity because of sensitive family issues said she weighed the decision for 10 years. She lived abroad for years but had pleasant memories of service in the U.S. Marine Corps. Yet the notion of double taxation and of future tax obligations for her kids, who will receive few U.S. services, finally pushed her to renounce. I loved my time in the Marines, and the U.S. is still a great country, she said, but having lived here 20 years and having to pay and file while seeing other countries' nationals not having to do that, I just think it's grossly unfair. It's taxation without representation. Stringent new banking regulations aimed both at curbing tax evasion and, under the Patriot Act, preventing money from flowing to terrorist groups have inadvertently made it harder for some expats to keep bank accounts in the U.S. and, in some cases, abroad. Some U.S.-based banks have closed expats' accounts because of difficulty in certifying that the holders still maintain U.S. addresses as required by a Patriot Act provision. So some folks have to have documented addresses and everything selectively enforced. But that's a nice way, I think, to cap out this first hour-plus massive crush of news. And there's still so much more to come on police states and drills in limbo and 9/11 updates. But kind of keeping in with the theme of this, if not so much, rather, the previous episode. And again, to remind and remind you to subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy and get all the alternative media flying out of Media Monarchy all the time. My new interview with Andrew Hoffman of eugenicswars.com, The New World Order from a Christian Perspective. Let's take a little break and think about forgiving Jesus.
I was a good kid. I wouldn't do you no harm. I was a nice kid with a nice paper round. Forgive me any pain I may have brought to you. God's help, I know I'll always be near to you. But Jesus hurt me when he deserted me, but I have forgiven Jesus for all the desire he placed in me, when there's nothing I can do. Good kid, through hail and snow I'd go, just to moon you. I carry my heart in my hand. Do you understand? Do you understand? But Jesus hurt me when he deserted me, but I have humiliation, Tuesday suffocation, Wednesday condescension, Thursday is pathetic, by Friday life has killed me, by Friday life has killed me. Desire, when there is nowhere I can go to offload this desire. And why did you give me so much love in a loveless world, when there's no one I can turn to unlock all this love? And why did you stick me in self-deprecating bones and skin? Why did you stick me in self-deprecating bones and skin? Do you hate me? Do you hate me? Do you hate me? Do you hate me? Do you
have forgiven Jesus. Have you? That was, of course, the one and only Morrissey. Giving us a little break here. Halfway through, more than halfway through, episode 168 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. It's the end of April 2010, and we're broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, laughlinradio.com, and the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Something I just fired up and am experimenting with and testing was something I got turned on to at an event put on last weekend by Radio23.org, and I'll have more on that for you this weekend on Media Monarchy. I got turned on to a site called Ustream.tv that does live streaming. So I've set it up, and it's rolling right now, and I tweeted out the updates. So if someone checks it out live, let me know how it all looks, if it works, if we're going to try and integrate a more interactive kind of show and to be live worldwide at any moment. And that's what it's all about, I think, in the alternative media and alternative news world. So much still to go over in the remaining 45 minutes of this episode 168 of MediaMonarchy.com. Let's get to the police state updates, crisis, martial law, and black market operations. The first story is a fascinating one, and like the other big stories of the week, still developing, and all the bizarre connections and incidents have yet to be fleshed out. But let's hop to Cryptagon and break this down, and we do have a little bit of audio video for you as well. Derek Michael Stansberry, former Air Force intelligence specialist, claims to have a bomb and fake passport aboard transatlantic flight. This from the LA Times. Air Force reservist Derek Michael Stansberry allegedly claimed in a confused note to have explosives aboard a Delta flight from Paris to Atlanta. His possible motives are unclear. An Air Force reservist working for a defense contractor in Africa was charged Wednesday with making bomb threats on a flight to the U.S. that prompted four air marshals to barricade his boots and laptop in the rear of the jetliner for fear any explosives might go off midair. Derek Michael Stansberry, who served two tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan as an Air Force intelligence specialist, allegedly said that he had packed dynamite in his boots and other explosives in his laptop and that he had a pressure switch to detonate the devices. The plane, Delta Flight 273 from Paris to Atlanta, carrying 235 people and a crew of 13, diverted to Bangor, Maine on Tuesday. Stansberry was arrested and charged with interfering with a flight crew and making false bomb threats on an aircraft. FBI Special Agent James R. McCarty said in an affidavit that Stansberry, 26, of Riverview, Florida, had passed a somewhat incoherent note to a flight attendant. Quote, "I'm not an American citizen. I was in Ouga illegally." That's O-U-A-G-A. "My passports and identity are fake. I bought that bag on eBay and have no association with the United States. I will take whatever COA the U.S. wants. I will leave my wallet and passport on this aircraft." McCarty said the note ended, "Please let my family know the truth. I blanked up and will let the HN preside over my prosecutions and that I love them." It was unclear what Stansberry meant by the acronyms HN or COA. COA is probably course of action. Delta Flight 273 from Paris diverted to Atlanta after man claims explosives. Florida military man. We've got reports from Reuters, from NationalTerrorAlert.com, and we also have a couple of CNN videos. What exactly is going on here? I can't say. But why would a former Air Force intelligence specialist claim to have a fake bomb and fake passport on a transatlantic flight?
There has been a flight that has been diverted to Bangor, Maine. It was scheduled to arrive in Atlanta. It left from Paris. Instead, it's been diverted. And there's the flight. There's the video of the flight as it was finally starting to come in. We're told that there was a disruptive passenger, that there's a federal air marshal on board, and that he has taken the passenger into custody. By the way, many of you have been tweeting since I shared the tweet from the fire rescue guys up there in Bangor who gave us information that there was a threat of a bomb on the plane. The person who sent me that tweet had suggested it was an Airbus 320. Now many of you have been tweeting me and telling me, and we thank you for this. Set us straight, guys. Many of you who are pilots or have information about this say it's not a 320, it's an A330. So it's an Airbus A330. There are the pictures on the ground from Bangor, Maine. What we understand is taking place right now is the plane is on the ground and many of the passengers are being questioned by law enforcement officials.
An Air Force veteran is in custody this morning, blamed for making a frightening claim that forced the plane to divert to Bangor, Maine. And that's where our John Berman has the latest on the investigation.
Delta Flight 273 touched down more than 1,000 miles short of its destination, all because of a strange claim from a 26-year-old former airman. Derek Stansberry is a veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and his father says he's squeaky clean.
Knowing my son, something started on the plane. Things were said and misunderstood.
Officials say Stansberry in seat 12J passed a note to a flight attendant that said, "Forgive me. I blanked up. I'm sorry." A team of federal air marshals approached Stansberry, who they say muttered he had explosives in his bag, also a fake passport. The air marshals subdued Stansberry. They brought his bag and his shoes to the back of the plane and built a barrier of pillows and blankets to buffer any possible explosion. On the ground in Maine, investigators found no explosives, and Stansberry's passport was no fake.
Come on, this
person. Passengers say while there was concern,
they did say there was a security breach on the plane.
Everyone remained calm, and most people didn't even know what was happening.
I was sleeping at the time.
Officials say Stansberry told air marshals he'd taken Valium and other pills before the flight. As for the passengers, more than 230 of them, they spent the night here in Maine and are headed to Atlanta this morning. Juju.
John Berman in Bangor, Maine. Thanks for the latest.
Most people weren't really paying attention and don't know what's going on. The last follow-up I have on the Michael Stansberry situation, Cryptagon following up, tracking his creepy customers, coming to Cryptagon.com, and he got a lot in reference to this guy. He had U.S. Special Operations Command, Ramstein Air Force Base, 754th Electronic Systems Group, U.S. Air Force, all around the world. Something is going on planes. There's some kind of meme, some kind of even possible drill set going on. All kicking into high gear with the underwear bomber, who I believe we have an update on in just a few moments. Flight diverted to North Carolina after threatening message found in the bathroom. That's from Reuters. President left Asheville, North Carolina as armed man, 23-year-old Joseph McVeigh, arrested. More on that from Copycat Effect on the twilight language of McVeigh and McVeigh. This current 23-year-old armed young man in Asheville, North Carolina is MCVEY, whereas Timothy McVeigh is MCVEIGH. And again, the signs, the symbols. Eco-terrorists with bomb arrested near Swiss IBM facility. Yes. This ties in with what we're seeing. I don't see eco-terrorists being called out as the major homegrown terror just yet because it doesn't seem to fit the agenda. But we shall see. Again, just as something's starting to bubble up, there's magically an event that somehow helps to kickstart and energize folks, and the agenda moves on. Former FBI agent gets 30 years for planning a home invasion. Ex-CIA official facing sex charge. Andrew Warren arrested in Virginia, and that ex-CIA operative fugitive had to be subdued with a taser. More on that from the Washington Post and the Associated Press. FBI agents dedicated to terror doubled in 8 years. As we've discussed, with the new financial world order, your only job will be with the nanny state. Lawmakers say that military could quell Chicago violence. That's from the Washington Post. And the story that's starting to make more rounds, the U.S. Army training to take on the Tea Party. We've heard memes of Tea Party, anti-Tea Party SWAT teams. But the Courier Journal on April 17th out of Louisville, Kentucky, reported on a military exercise named Mangudai, named after the special forces of Genghis Khan's Mongol army who could fight for days without food or sleep. The Kentucky newspaper portrayed the exercise as an effort to train soldiers to battle the Taliban in Afghanistan. But according to other information received by Patriot Post blog, there's another aspect to the drill not reported by local media. And that's when you get into the real things going on. An exercise at Fort Knox at the U.S. Bullion Depository. As with most exercises, Fort Knox alert occurred in stages, as if real-time intelligence was being provided at various intervals. The terrorist threat are local militia groups, anti-government protesters, and Tea Party. In short, the military was training in Kentucky to take on mythical militias, no word if they were of the FBI-created variety, and remarkably, the nonviolent Tea Party movement, which we've noted started out essentially as a Ron Paul libertarian, anti-Federal Reserve, anti-war of aggression, pro-personal liberty movement, co-opted and misdirected by all the same phonies, bringing you back into the two-party fake paradigm. But more on McVeigh and more on the McVeigh tapes, the recent propaganda push from Maddow and General Electric and Microsoft, a fairy tale designed to demonize the Patriot movement. This really breaks it down, and again, we've just passed the anniversary of OKC, as we went over last week. But bringing us back to the present, and there's still even more to go over. Oklahoma passes a bill outlawing militia recruitment.
A state lawmaker wants unauthorized militia members to go to prison.
State Rep. Mike Shelton says militias and hate groups like the KKK are just as dangerous as gangs. And this proposal comes just days after former President Clinton issued a warning about anti-government attitudes.
I am not trying to muzzle anybody. Have at it. Go fight. Go do whatever you want. You don't have to be nice, and you can be harsh, but you've got to be very careful not to advocate violence or cross the line.
The legislation comes 1 week after some state lawmakers said they supported a state militia.
And Eyewitness News 5's Brandon Byer is live with both sides of that heated debate. Brandon.
Paul and Anita, as we speak, that bill sits on the House floor awaiting a vote. It wants to, it looks to increase the penalty for gang members who are recruiting from 1 year in prison up to five, and one lawmaker wants to see that applied to militia recruiters as well. Representative Mike Shelton says recruiting for militias like the Ku Klux Klan is growing faster in Oklahoma than any other state in the country. That's why he wants stiffer penalties for unauthorized militias and other domestic terror groups. State Senator Randy Brogdon, who declined comment today, saying he wasn't familiar enough with the amendment, has shown some support for militias and the right to bear arms. He had this to say last week.
I regurgitated what the Second Amendment is all about, and it means that you and I have the right to keep and bear arms and to protect ourselves from each other and even protect ourselves from a government if it in fact gets out of control.
But Representative Shelton says Oklahoma has seen the damage done by what he calls militia fanatics. He says the Ku Klux Klan has a long history of violence. It feels like these organizations should be treated no differently than violent gang members. I want to tell you, we made several phone calls to Representative Shelton, also stopped by his office behind me in the Capitol, but he was simply too busy to meet with us. Live this evening at the Capitol, Brandon Byer, Eyewitness News 5.
Brandon, thank you. Senate Bill 2018 and Shelton's amendments could pass through the House this week. This has been a hot topic on our Facebook page. Starla left this comment. She writes, "This is long overdue. We want peace in America and especially in the heartland." But Austin says, quote here, "Militias are the reason this country is a country. Come on now, people, get over it," end quote.
Heartland security, my friends. Virginia stages bioterror event. That's from bioprepwatch.com. My Fox Philly goes into the FBI and the EPA holding mock terrorism drill called Liberty Rad X in Ridley, Pennsylvania at the Boeing plant. RADX, probably standing for Radiation Exercise. Sioux City, Iowa, stages bioterror simulation. North Dakota officials take part in CBRN training. That's CBRN. That's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear. Examiner.com is reporting a special Army unit ready to be deployed on American soil just before November elections. And while that may sound like fear-mongering, it's already happened. NORTHCOM has already positioned thousands of troops, battle-hardened, back from Afghanistan and other wars of aggression based on lies and false flag events. In October of this year, 1 month prior to the November midterm elections, a special Army unit known as Consequence Management Response Force will be ready for deployment on American soil if so ordered by the President. The Special Force, which is the new name being given to the 1st Brigade Combat Team of the 3rd Infantry, has been training at Fort Stewart, Georgia, comprised of 80,000 troops. According to the Army Times, they may be called upon to help with civil unrest and crowd control, or to deal with potentially horrific scenarios such as a massive poisoning and chaos in response to a chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear, or high-yield explosive. The key phrase is, may be called upon to help with civil unrest. Are our summers of discontent getting hotter and hotter? Other things on the horizon. A great new piece from Dana Gabriel on beyourownleader.blogspot.com. Police State Canada 2010 and the G20 Summit being held June 26th and 27th at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, preceded by the G8 Summit, which will take place in Huntsville, Ontario. The secretive meetings will be attended by world leaders, finance ministers, central bank governors, along with thousands of other delegates. It'll be the largest security event in Canadian history, exceeding the Vancouver Winter Olympics. Downtown Toronto will be turned into a security fortress with fences, barricades, checkpoints, street closures, thus greatly affecting local residents. While the G8 and G20 summits will attract their share of peaceful protesters, other more radical and fringe elements may try to capitalize on the event. Agent provocateurs might also be used, whose actions could then justify police crackdown and as a means to demonize all demonstrators. The G20 summit will deepen police state measures as well as further integrate local, provincial, federal law enforcement agencies and the military. Cross-border. So this is coming very soon, June 26th and 27th, G8, G20 meetings, Toronto Police State. More on that from Be Your Own Leader. From Prison Planet, from pressfortruth.ca, where they've caught some of the pregame show, if you will. Police State Toronto terror drill caught on tape, again from pressfortruth.ca. Oh, and here he is again, that patsy. Underwear bomber Mutalab seen in a new video of training featuring martyrdom statements. We don't have time to yet again thoroughly debunk the Christmas bomber story. All these terror events, the big ones, they always have the fingerprints of the intelligence agencies. Always. Pentagon to comply with only part of Fort Hood probe. That was the little appetizer before the Christmas bombing event. More on that from Reuters. And where I took the title of this post from, Knowledge is the Killer of Fear. Crisis, Martial Law, and Black Market Operations. Following the maxim that we should all follow, and that is to follow the money. MI5 files on 7/7 attacks impossible to access. More on that from the BBC. And as we've gone through all the drills and all the massive false flag terror events, we'll wrap it up and bring it right to the crib in your home the government has your baby's DNA. Naturalnews.com following up on a story we covered a couple of months ago. And I believe that's even the CNN story from back in February. The government has your baby's DNA. Now, as an addendum to the police state updates, we've got an op-ed on the Washington Times from 2 weeks ago, April 15th. Radley Balko writes, paramilitary police don't make us safer. But the drills go on and on, my friends. And we've been noting National Level Exercise 2010 that was to be coming soon. We covered it last week. Why is FEMA trying to cover up National Level Exercise 2010? So the latest on this on MediaMonarchy.com, posted April 27th, military cancels nuclear attack test. National Level Exercise 10 terror drills in limbo. Now, an interesting report from VeteransToday.com, an article from Gordon Duff, gets into some of this back-channel chatter and rumors suggesting the stage being set for some type of false flag, patsy, dirty bomb event to be blamed on Iran or Al-Qaeda, or who knows. But before we try and dive in a little bit deeper in the time that we have left here, let's just take it from the Washington Times. Make this simple. The U.S. military has canceled... that's a Freudian slip. Let's try that again. The U.S. military has canceled a major field exercise that tests its response to a nuclear attack, angering some officials who say that what's now planned for this month will be a waste of time. U.S. Northern Command, that's NORTHCOM, in Colorado, withdrew from major participation in this month's National Level Exercise, NLE, a large-scale drill that tests whether the military and the Department of Homeland Security can work with local governments to respond to an attack or natural disaster. The exercise was canceled recently after the planned site for a post-nuclear attack response, Las Vegas, pulled out in November, fearing a negative impact on its struggling business environment at the insistence of Harry Reid from Nevada. A government official involved in NLE planning said a new site could not be found. The official also said that NORTHCOM's exercise plans for cooping continuity of operation, COO, cooping, during which commanders go to off-site locations, also had been scratched. All I know is it's been turned into garbage, said the official, who of course asked not to be identified because of the sensitivity of the information. It's a non-event. The NLE, which is supposed to be a series of hands-on exercises to test the system in the event terrorists use a nuclear device, has become instead a tabletop exercise at best, the official said. Major Michael Humphreys, NORTHCOM spokesman, said the military officials decided to de-link the Ardent Century exercise from National Level Exercise, but he stressed that the command conducts other exercises and cooping at other times. Other developing related updates to this coming from Fighting for Liberty, News Junkie Post, The Denver Post, and Prison Planet. NORTHCOM backs out of National Level Exercise 2010. NLE 10, including linked continuity of operations drill, canceled. And the related note, are we at the brink of a major nuclear accident in America? It sure seems like they're prepping us for something like that. I got a massive posting on this, and it's in my email, which I can't dig out right now for you, and I didn't make a copy of it. But it goes back to the Veterans Today article from Gordon Duff, and it ties in with just watching the signs of what the black ops, the private military contractors, the suspicious events, the drills and the exercises going on, whether that's on military bases or on planes, or on critical infrastructure. Something strange is going on with these drills. We can only kind of speculate here. Something that will tie in that this longer fleshing out goes into that I can't fully get into you right now. But it's going through essentially all the oddities. This ties in with Vegas and Los Angeles, as well as Denver, which is right where Northcom is located. So is this drill really canceled? Is it just going to be moved to somewhere else? Are we going to be able to find out what's going on in this drill so we can track them? An interesting note made in conjunction to all of this as possible connections or cover-ups or distractions or suspicious activities that I can't even speculate about right now. From right in Colorado and Denver, the president of the Colorado Rockies sports team found dead in his Salt Lake City hotel room.
Good evening. Tragedy for the Colorado Rockies baseball club. The president, Kelly McGregor, was found dead this morning in a Salt Lake City hotel room.
Police say his death does not appear to be suspicious. Sandra Yee tells us what he was doing in Utah.
Amanda and Bruce, people who knew Kelly McGregor say he was committed to making Salt Lake City a second home for the Rockies. McGregor and other Rockies management came to Utah yesterday morning to do some press events. He also attended an invitation-only meet-and-greet session at Love Communications. Love Communications does community and media relations for the team here in Utah. McGregor came to Utah every year for the past 4 years to try and build the team's fan base. Tom Love says he dropped McGregor off at his hotel around 9 o'clock last night. McGregor's sudden death was a shock to him.
We had a phenomenal dinner. He was a phenomenal host. Probably interacted with 70 different people. Greeted them by name. If he'd met them before last year or the year before, would recognize them and remember their face.
McGregor was traveling with team chairman and CEO Charlie Monfort and executive vice president Greg Fiesel. Police say McGregor's associates could not get a hold of him this morning. They were scheduled to catch a flight out of Utah. Just before 9 o'clock, hotel employees at the Grand America went into McGregor's room and found him unconscious. Emergency workers tried to revive him but were unsuccessful. The case has now been handed over to the medical examiner's office, but investigators say at this time the cause of death appears to be natural causes or a medical condition. McGregor has been president of the Rockies since October of 2001. He leaves behind a wife and four children. Charlie Monfort released a statement about McGregor's death, and you could read that statement on our website at KSL.com. Back to you.
Thank you.
Again, the speculation surrounding these drills are just that. We try and pay attention and draw attention to the drills because that's where these events happen that somehow seem to go live, where the exact same things they're drilling about and practicing somehow seem to happen as they do on 9/11 or 7/7, or when viruses get out of labs. So this is National Level Exercise 2010, Terror Drills in Limbo, and again, we'll send you to the flashback from just last week. So again, go to episode 167 to go further into National Level Exercise and ask the question, why is FEMA trying to cover it up? It's now time for 9/11 updates, my friends. And the updates are posted underneath the main story here on MediaMonarchy.com. Pakistani tells 60 Minutes that the U.S. attacked itself on 9/11. This from Raw Story and Raw Replay. CBS's Leslie Stahl talked with Pakistani students in Pakistan's Swat Valley. One student told Stahl that the U.S. attacked itself on 9/11 as an excuse to go to war with Muslim countries.
And after all of that, I wondered if he was making any headway against the narrative.
How many of you believe it is U.S. policy to be at war with Islam and to destroy Islam? Okay, so about a third of you believe that.
I have a question regarding 9/11.
When this student got up to ask me a question about the bombing of the World Trade Center, I got a feel for how much we can talk past each other.
So you're telling me that Al-Qaeda didn't do 9/11. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We all know that Al-Qaeda was created by the CIA.
He was saying it was the CIA that told Osama bin Laden to attack on 9/11.
We attacked our own Pentagon and the World Trade Center to have a justification to go into Afghanistan. Do you really believe that?
They believe we attacked ourselves so we could go to Afghanistan and kill Muslims.
What I'm sensing is that there is an enormous amount of anti-Americanism. Am I right?
Give us one single reason to love America. We need to forget about the rest of the millions of reasons to hate America.
Yeah. After a statement like that, you begin to question whether even a former extremist can uproot the idea here that the West is out to destroy Islam.
You're one person, and you're kind of blowing into the wind. It's almost like Don Quixote. Tilting at windmills.
There are people who are as frustrated as we are with extremism in their own country here in Pakistan, but they've never had anyone to articulate that frustration, to organize them, and to help them work along those lines. That means work. It means we have to be in it for the long haul. And it means the solution isn't going to come through bombs or through prison. It has to come through the ideas debate, which is, by definition, a long strategy.
It does have to happen in the info war. That little nugget at the end of that 60 Minutes piece that, again, is on Raw Replay on rawstory.com. You had to go through the whole 15-16 minute segment on the narrative about Islamic ideology, where they follow this guy who used to be for it and now he's against it and is going around trying to talk to people. And of course, we do know that Al-Qaeda was created by the CIA from the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets, which Brzezinski, who is to this day an advisor to President Obama, that we drew in the Soviets into Afghanistan in the late 70s. That's the little part they leave out. Brzezinski, power mad, grand chessboard. Can't help but brag about it. So we know about it. Now, let's get to some of the other amazing 9/11 updates, my friends. Bombshell on Lucky Larry Silverstein. Now, James Corbett goes into this on last week's Sunday update from CorbettReport.com, but coming from Paul Joseph Watson, Silverstein wanted to demolish Building 7 on 9/11. Now, let's track this back. A Fox News hit piece against Jesse Ventura and the 9/11 Truth Movement, written by former D.C. prosecutor Jeffrey Scott Shapiro, inadvertently revealed a shocking truth, that WTC leaseholder Larry Silverstein, who collected nearly $500 million in insurance as a result of the collapsing Building 7, a 47-story structure that wasn't hit by a plane but collapsed in 7 seconds on 9/11, was on the phone to his insurance carrier attempting to convince them that the building should be brought down via controlled demolition. Writing for Fox News with a link for you, quote, "I was working as a journalist for Gannett News at Ground Zero that day, and I remember very clearly what I saw and heard. Shortly before the building collapsed, several NYPD officers and Con Ed workers told me that Larry Silverstein, the property developer of One World Financial Center, was on the phone with his insurance carrier to see if they would maybe authorize the controlled demolition of the building, since its foundation was already unstable and expected to fall." Now, of course, Lucky Larry, in February 2002, Silverstein Properties won $861 million from Industrial Risk Insurers to rebuild on the site of WTC 7. A controlled demolition would have minimized the damage caused by the building's imminent collapse and potentially saved lives. Many law enforcement personnel, fighters, and other journalists were aware of this possible option. There was no secret. There was no conspiracy, writes Shapiro. However, obviously aware of how it would impact his insurance claim, Larry Silverstein has consistently denied that there was ever a plan to intentionally demolish Building 7. Then we go down the list on the Pullet quote and all of that, but quite amazing. So more on this from C. Clearly. And this is what I was referencing a little bit ago. Fox News presents WTC 7. Recently, two prominent articles were published in opposing veins. NPR and Trust in Government by Robert Shetterly on April 19th, which called out NPR for allowing the propaganda operative Philip Zelikow to frame a discussion on trust in government while failing to note his long record of purposeful world stage obfuscation, including a treacherous role in the area of WTC7. Then, Shame on Jesse Ventura by Jeffrey Scott Shapiro, which we just covered, and that gets into Larry Silverstein's plan to use controlled demolition on Building 7. Clarity as a depiction of rare courage in our dominant landscape, and as partial portrayal of how timing works in our fabricated environment. Now, we kind of jumbled and stumbled through that. But that's been the theme of this episode, the timing. It's all in the timing. So, we mentioned Laura's memoirs coming out, discussing her somehow killing her boyfriend when she was a teenager, and how she thinks she and George were poisoned at the 07 G8 in Germany. George W. Bush has his own new memoirs coming soon, Decision Points. George W. Bush set to admit mistakes for the first time as he reveals new details on 9/11 in his new memoir. Let's hope he's got a good editor. In Decision Points, he's going to focus on his battle with alcohol as well as the drama of 9/11. He's said to have completed the first draft of the book, which will feature never-before-heard details surrounding 9/11. We'll see if that makes it out. More on that from the First Post. Gripping Bush memoirs to include 9/11 revelations. I'm sure there won't be revelations, but it'll probably just be another spin and another change of events and timings. And you were when, where? Beam from World Trade Center arrives at the Shriver, Colorado Air Force Base for a 9/11 memorial. More on that from KKTV.com, where someone basically notes we're all going to be foreclosed and homeless, but gee, at least we'll have this beam from World Trade Center. Here's an interesting one, again from RightSideNews.com, and again, the things that I post on Media Monarchy doesn't mean I necessarily endorse them. I post a lot of different news from all sides of all the quote-unquote political spectrum perspectives. But the Right Side News gets into 9/11 conspiracy theories gaining momentum. Now, this article's from April 26, 2010, but you would think that they just woke up to all this. 9/11 truth has done nothing but grow and grow and grow in the nearly 9 years. The events of 9/11 are what got me into alternative news and politics. And yes, you can call it conspiracies, but I stay away from the theories, and I tell you point blank when we're talking about speculative situations. You think this all happens by accident? Last week, it was Emmanuel Goldstein, Tim Osman, Osama bin Laden. Somebody yanked his Facebook page. Now this week, Facebook removed al-Zawahiri, al-Qaeda's number two. They pulled his page from Facebook. Again, not like these were really set up by these guys. But as we've said time and time before, the most wanted terrorist organization in the world can somehow put out videos and websites and audio messages and blog posts and status updates on Facebook, but God, we just somehow can't track them down. We launch these wars of aggression based on flimsy evidence, trumped up provocations and false flag events, catalyzing catastrophic events meant to herd the public along for the new agenda. Al-Qaeda means the database. The base. The database of ex-Mujahideen fighters. Do some of these guys really think they're working for the jihad? Of course. Are some of them really working for the jihad? Of course. But this is the whole murky world of patsies and moles and triple agents and all these things, again, that you see in movies and you love and you pay top dollar for it. But when it's happening every day in the news, it may not be on your nightly corporate-controlled news, but that's why we're here with the alternative media, is because now we have a choice. And while we still have that choice, we're going to use it. So that's why we're using all the bells and whistles to make a racket in the digital town square. I've never been one to run around in the street and yell and scream and hold signs. I think I do much better one-on-one, talking to folks and friends and family. More receptive, not trying to yell at people and change their minds, but I definitely notice, and this is something that Andrew Hoffman and I mentioned in our interview, that everybody has their little sticking point. And if you can plant those seeds in the InfoWar, in open source intelligence, when you can get them to come back to you and say, hey, what's the deal with this oil rig thing? This all kind of seems suspicious. When you find out what someone's naturally interested in, you can help tailor the info bombs for that person. Now I'm digressing, and we have to finish off these 9/11 updates. We have another clip, a video for you. I don't have the clip, rather. News anchors basically looking visibly kind of scared after Richard Gage lays some 9/11 truth on them. And the last note from 911blogger.com, declassified 9/11 U.S. Secret Service Freedom of Information Act records describing the activity of President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. With a full 10 meg PDF download for you. We're still asking these questions because they've never adequately been answered. Ultimately, 9/11 truth is anti-war at its core. And we need the anti-war and 9/11 truth and the Tea Party and the anarchists and the left and the white and the right and the black and the Christians and the atheists. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this power-packed episode 168 for Media Monarchy. It's the end of April 2010, episode 168. We put up two episodes, or rather, one interview and a B-side on its way. This episode, so much more coming soon. So many plans, so many ways to spread this information and get in touch with all of you. And again, you can hit me up on all the bells and whistles that are just tools. Again, I love media and art and music and film and computers and tech and all that stuff. But I don't like the gear. I don't love the gear. I don't fetishize the gear. They're just tools. What are you doing with the tools? So let's connect up and share information, because that's how we'll all make better informed decisions about our lives, my friends. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, and yes, for the first time, we were experimenting with the live video stream on Ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. Give me some feedback on that. Again, let me remind you to please continue your donations if you have not. I ask you kindly. $10 to Media Monarchy supports this operation and keeps it going and growing, and you get the exclusive DVD from TragedyandHope.com called 2020 Hindsight. As the economy crash only continues to accelerate, the information in 2020 Hindsight from Richard Grove and Paul Verge only becomes more and more important. Now, much as Cryptagon was tracking some of the visits from the military concerning the former Air Force intel, Michael Stansberry, who claimed to have a fake passport and bomb and claimed to not even be an American citizen, tracking the visitors that come to the site. I like to do that myself, my friends, and it's the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Playboy out of Chicago, Illinois, reading about body scanners that can send and store images. Homeland Security out of D.C., reading about DHS and Predator drones fighting the Red River flood. Isn't that interesting? They're reading that story from a year or so ago as the Gulf oil rig disaster explodes. West Virginia Department of Education out of Hedgesville, West Virginia. Someone there Googled monarchy civil defense. I don't know if they meant me or not, but they got it. And the USAISC headquarters in Manhattan, Kansas. Hit me up via CorbettReport.com. My friends, it's going to be a busy weekend. Don't get tugged around in the emotional tug of war and don't let us all destroy each other. Watch the police state activities going on at the Kentucky Derby. Watch for provocateurs at these May Day rallies. And watch the left-right paradigm. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. This has been 168th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, April 30th, 2010. As always, begging you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.